in the limelight. It is now over 4.5 years that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, with the backing and weaponry from United States, Britain and France, have imposed a very destructive war on Yemen, that besides the killing of over 100,000 men, women and children, has destroyed the infrastructure of the country and is threatening the country with famine and epidemics. Yet the weapons manufacturers of the United States and Britain, such as Raytheon, shamelessly proclaim, strike with creativity. Stay with us for an interesting article published on the Common Dreams website, titled Death, Bloodshed and Misery in Yemen. The article has been written by Kathy Kelly. Kathy Kelly coordinates Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Writing about his visit to the world's largest weapons bazaar, held in London in October, journalist Aaron Merat describes reading the slogan emblazoned above Raytheon's stall, strike with creativity. Raytheon manufactures Paveway laser-guided bombs, produced in factories in both United States and Britain, fragments of which have been found in the wreckage of schools, hospitals, and marketplaces across Yemen. However, I wonder, can a weapons manufacturer that causes such death, bloodshed and misery lay claim to creativity? Consider the Raytheon weapons now demolishing Yemen. Fragments of Raytheon and other US manufacturers' weapons dot blast sites where Yemeni survivors collect body parts and scattered bits of clothing, which are needed to compile lists of the dead. In September, the Air Force of Saudi Arabia hit a detention center in the Dhamar Governorate in Yemen, in northern highlands of Yemen, with 7 airstrikes that killed at least 100 people and pulverized the area, according to Bethan McKernan, reporting for the Guardian newspaper. It took 5 days to remove all the bodies impaled on metalwork ripped from the walls of the blasts, she wrote. After the attack, Bethan McKernan interviewed Mustafa Al-Adel, a 22-year-old security guard employed at the site. His brother, Ahmad, also a security guard, was among those killed. Adel pointed to a blanket visible on the second floor of a building where the guards had slept. "You can see Ahmad's blue blanket up there," said Adel. "There were 200 people here, but now it's just ghosts." Saudi Arabia and other countries in the Saudi-led coalition bombarding and blockading Yemen have killed literally tens of thousands of people, wrecking the country's already enfeebled infrastructure and bringing Yemen to the brink of a famine that may kill millions more. President Donald Trump signaled additional support for Saudi Arabia on 11th of October this year when the U.S. military announced it would send thousands more troops to the kingdom, bringing the number of U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia to 14,000. For people in the United States to understand why Yemenis would join together to resist the Saudis requires a deep awareness of how financial institutions, in attempting to gain control of the valuable resources, have pushed farmers and villagers across Yemen into debt and into desperation. Issa Bloomi writes about this sordid history in his 2018 published book titled Destroying Yemen, What Chaos in Arabia Tells Us About the World. Issa Bloomi details how Yemen's society, largely independent and agrarian society, became a guinea pig for International Monetary Fund, IMF, development projects, which, based on strikingly colonialist theories of modernization, crushed grassroots institutions and amounted to cost-effective ways of prying Yemen's wealth out of its people's hands. Local development associations, for example, were formed during the 1970s to help people cooperatively determine what crops they should grow and how they would use the profits. But U.S. Agency for International Development experts pressured these groups to instead produce cash crops strictly meant for export. The author, Isa Blumi, writes, "After all, with the right kind of cash crop and the use of American labor-saving technology, pesticides and fertilizers included, Yemen's villagers were no longer needed in the fields. Alternatively, they could work in cities in sweatshops producing clothes for a global market, or the soon-booming oil and gas projects." Blumi's book documents fiercely stubborn creativity with which, decade by decade, Yemenis kept surprising the West, exploring and pursuing countermeasures to resist this exploitative control and risking the West's destructive anger. When farmers desperate for cash went to work in Saudi Arabia, for instance, they consistently sent remittances back home to their families that saved the cash and invested in local projects using local bank transfers. Imams and village leaders encouraged people to resist imperialist modernization projects, knowing that the West's preferred modern role for them was as wage slaves with no hope of developing a better future. The popular Ansarullah movement began when Sayyid Hussein al-Houthi, an opponent of Yemen's dictatorial and Western allied regime of Ali Abdullah Saleh, tried to defend the water and land rights of locals in the Sa'dah province in northwestern Yemen. Sharing what was then a porous and informal border with Saudi Arabia, they often found themselves in disputes with Saudi border patrols. They also resisted structural adjustment demands by the International Monetary Fund, IMF, to privatize some of Yemen's best farming and grazing land. When the dictator, Ali Abdullah Saleh, made criminal concessions to Saudi Arabia, Sayyid Hussein al-Houthi and his followers persisted with their protests. Each new confrontation won over thousands of people, eventually spreading beyond Sa'dah province in northern Yemen. Isa Blumi cites numerous instances in which Yemen's economic assets were pillaged, with Ali Abdullah Saleh's approval, by well-heeled global financial interests. In 2008, an extremely wealthy member of the Osama bin Laden family aimed to build a bridge across the mouth of the Red Sea from Yemen to Djibouti. The project could generate hundreds of billions of dollars for investors and quicken the process of exploitative modernization. But it would also require building railways and roads where there are only villages now. People living along the coastline of the Red Sea would be in the way. Since 2015, fighting has been concentrated in this area, called the Tihama. Control of the coastline would also allow financial takeover of potentially profitable Yemeni fisheries. Blumi says billions of dollars of annual income are at stake, noting with irony that a war causing starvation is being waged in part to gain control over food assets. A recent United Nations report says that Yemen is now on course to become the world's poorest country, with 79% of Yemen's population living beneath the poverty line and 65% deemed extremely poor. The Yemen Data Project estimated in March that 600 civilian structures on average are damaged or destroyed every month in Yemen, mostly by Saudi and United Arab Emirates airstrikes. Staple food items are now on average 150% higher in price than before the crisis escalated, according to a 2019 report by the Norwegian Refugee Council. Teachers, health workers and civil servants in the northern part of the country haven't been paid for years, according to the report by the Norwegian Refugee Council. Here in the United States, News commentators discuss the Trump impeachment story like the breaking developments to bombshell after bombshell. In Yemen, real bombshells made in the United States kill and maim innocent Yemeni civilians, including children, virtually every day.